Welcome back to Nerds Amalgamated. I'm the Professor and my co-host is still the DJ. I haven't gotten rid of him yet.
I am like
How
the
are
cockroach.
You, DJ?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Yeah, except the cockroach should be significantly more attractive.
It always survives no matter what you throw at it. It will always survive.
Well, first up tonight, we have the topic of surveillance in video games. A couple of days ago, I came across a paper titled in full, Surveilling the Gamers, Privacy Impacts of the Video Game Industry. We'll have a link to that in the show notes. But it's a paper reviewing the ability of game developers to surveil their gamers. And it reviews different technology, so even just by looking at the way someone plays, most games these days have some sort of telemetry, even if it's as simple as achievements. But that sort of telemetry will tell you something about the player. And games are increasingly asking for more and more permissions, or through their hardware requiring more and more access to your personal life.
I mean, we've already seen that with VR and stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of controversy about VR, because VR tends to have cameras. Those cameras can give you an idea of the space someone is playing in. Most VR uses infrared, but particularly if you have a type that has a VR pass-through, so that you can see what's around you, or the type that has a regular visible light style cameras, you can have a look at that and get a good idea of what's in a person's room. If you can't do that, then you can look at how they move in their room and get a good idea of what's in the room or the layout of their room. And if you're really lucky, you're the Kinect, which was an always on webcam, basically. Always listening. But it gets worse than that. So those, you'd think, I have to buy this particular technology. That's a pretty obvious thing when it's in my home that, yes, someone could use that. Although it is possible to export the map of the house from a Roomba and turn it into a Doom map. So you're still not entirely safe, even with things that you'd think wouldn't be able to spy on you. But we spoke about it last week, about tracking gamers in EVE to find out how they play and comparing how they play to their real-world circumstances. And it identified things like gamers in violent places tend to be less violent in-game. Gamers in places with a poor economy tend to be more frugal in-game. And what I'm reading in this paper is that it goes beyond that, and that you can use that sort of data to tell you basically anything you want about the gamer. Then we have the additional fun of achievements. Achievements, you might think, are pretty simple. They just tell you, Bob killed 500 enemies. Bob finished the level. But what they also tell you about Bob is some little secret things about his propensity to addiction. His playstyle can tell you his age, his gender, his personality.
But that's like, but then doesn't that always go through? Isn't that always like available through the like PlayStation Store, for example, or your various stores when you have to put in your details, like, my name is so-and-so, my age is this age, that kind of thing.
What if you put in fake details?
Ooh.
Or for the few things that don't take that? So signing up for, say, the PlayStation Store or the Xbox Store, you are creating a profile that has your name and address and age attached to it, but the individual games don't know that about you.
Wouldn't IP address do that as well, though? Like if you
yes, but the game developers don't have access to Sony's or Microsoft's database.
Oh.
For the most part, the game developers can't tell what your account details are on the Sony database. Unless you use the same login name there, then they can log in and have a look at the publicly available info on there.
And wouldn't they also look in through the spending details? Like, for example, if you're using credit card info and stuff.
That would be all for games that have microtransactions, but that would also be an important one for them to track, because microtransactions are the, you know, they basically give your payment details, well, your spending habits to the game developer.
Yeah. I mean, this sort of behavior reminds me of YouTube. Remember, you know how when you watch a YouTube video and then all of a sudden that line of YouTube videos will be on your recommended list?
Yep.
Yeah, it's sort of like that type of psychology put into games. So, like, this guy likes fighting games. So we're like, this guy likes fighting games, so we'll add fighting games into his, like, if he wants to look for new fighting games, there's some fighting games he can try, that kind of thing.
Yes, but that's still a very limited scope compared to what they are actually dealing with. Basically, game developers can find out anything they want about you.
So don't tell me.
They can find out. Sorry?
So don't tell me. Devi Boy knows where I live?
Well, yeah, I told him.
Dang. But let's be real though. So if game developers know all your details, isn't that kind of like more, isn't that kind of intrusive in a sense? Like, it'd be kind of like doxing in a sense.
It is pretty intrusive. Like, you can tell someone's emotional state. You could tell if someone is a particularly aggressive person. Do they rage quit a lot? Because there seems to be a link between the sort of people who rage quit and people who are aggressive.
Although, I've noticed in most games these days, they've introduced game stats like number of wins, number of special moves you use, or number of kills, or number of deaths. Like, they add a lot of stats these days, and that's very interesting. Like, normally
in a way, they're showing us what they're already tracking. I mean, we look at that and think, that's cool. That's great to look at it, but the game developer can tell us a whole bunch of other stuff. They might be tracking stuff that they aren't showing, and by feeding that information into a model, they can make predictions about you.
So, I know I might have asked this question for a lot of our game developing stuff, but from a game developer standpoint, is this consequential to game developing as a whole?
I think it raises the question. It's a reminder that we can tell all of these things about a player based on information that we gather in-game. But should we? So this paper's quite in depth about the sort of information you can infer from a player's playstyle. And even beyond that, if you can tell by the peripherals they are using what kind of person they are, what social class they're in as well. Obviously, someone who owns a Valve Index is going to be likely to be in a far higher social class than someone who owns the Oculus Quest, which costs like...
Oculus Quest costs like $200, doesn't it? Oh, wait, no.
Yeah, it's in the area of about $300. A Vive Index is close to $2,000. So that would obviously give you an idea that the person who owns the Index is most likely a higher social class than the person with the Quest, because they have more disposable cash. But not only that, the hardware in your PC, the console, especially now that consoles are releasing multiple variants that have different powered hardware, like the Xbox X and S, and the PlayStation Slim, which it used to be you'd get the Slim model, and it would mostly be a physical change. The hardware would change a bit. Sometimes they drop reverse compatibility with older games. But the... now we can tell that someone who owns the full-size PS5 is likely better off than a person with a Slim. And all of this can be fed into models that would let you manipulate people, I think, is the key issue here. That from a game developer's perspective, this sort of information is exactly what you need to target the whales. We all know that games make most of their money from a small handful of players. The goal is to get that handful of players addicted so that they want to spend boatloads of money. And they're known as whales. So I think from a game developer perspective, using this sort of data to get people addicted is pretty morally wrong. But from a privacy perspective, this data goes out over the internet. And the golden rule of the internet is that it will be hacked.
I thought the golden rule of the internet never forgets.
Well, that too.
The one thing I would wonder is, where does the consumer rights come into this? Because, you know, we're the consumers and we have our own sets of rights. When we buy a product, we ought to be protected. Like, where does the consumer rights fall into this category, though?
I'd go for the GDPR as a good example there. Because the GDPR lets you go to a company and basically ask them to delete all the data they have on you. Unfortunately, we don't have anything like that in Australia.
What about the EPF? Wouldn't they do it, though?
No. They're more of an activist group. They don't have the power to make the laws yet.
Sorry. As for the audience, it's not EPF. It's, what was
EFF?
It?
EFF?
Yeah, that's one. The EFF.
Yeah. Yes, the EFF does not have the power for that.
I know, they might not have the power, but at least they can raise the awareness to, like, all the organizations. Well, like, for example, if it were to go to America, for example, they go to the senators and stuff and warn them, like, hey, these companies are breaching privacy rights. Like, where's the civil liberties and stuff?
Well, yes, but they still don't make the most impact. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of impact that they've actually had. They bring up a lot of information to all of us about the sorts of issues we're facing, but the companies just kind of ignore it because it's not legally binding. And unfortunately, the political will isn't there in a lot of the world yet.
Oh, come on. It's the same. Come on. Where was the... There was a lot of political will. Like, for example, when the loot boxes drama fiasco... When the loot boxes drama kicked in.
Okay, that's one minor aspect. Well, it's a large aspect, but it's one aspect of a massive problem. And look at how many years it took to get the conversation to loot boxes.
A lot, yeah. Still, it's still going, interestingly.
Yeah. Although, there's only a couple of countries that have actually brought in laws to deal with loot boxes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Curiously, though, would you also use loot boxes as a way of surveillance?
Well, I'd bring them up to the same idea as the monitoring to cause addiction.
Hmm.
Because, like I said, most games make most of their money from whales. So, you're not after the people who are only buying one or two loot boxes. You're after the people who are dumping thousands of dollars into it. So, if you could identify who those players are and work out how to hook them, then you'd be very well off.
And let me guess, that formula is very, very elusive.
It is, but this is the sort of data that would make it a lot easier.
Hmm.
Not to mention, some of these things can make medical predictions. Like, the Wii Fit was specifically designed and advertised as a medical device. Not as in the not in the use in doctor's offices way, but it collects medical data about you. What if that gets hacked while it's being sent back over the internet to the game servers? Someone could hack into your account and find out some significant information about you.
And probably sell the info to the highest bidder.
Yeah. So it's an attack vector. Should we really be opening that attack vector? Is that a can of worms we really want to open?
I mean, I think the can of worms has already been opened. I mean, remember the old days when terrorists used Call of Duty as a way to communicate with other players and tell them to join the organizations?
Yeah, I was going to get to that. The NSA, I think, wanted about 10 years ago, wanted permission to spy on video game conversations. Because they thought terrorists were using the in-game chat to talk about terror stuff. So we're looking at governments, hackers, unsavory businesses like Facebook, sue me, Mark. all of that sort of stuff. And is this a can of worms we should be opening? I don't think so.
But the scary part's going to be that can of worms, no matter how much we deny that, it's going to be opened up pretty soon. Like, it's only a matter of time before that can of worms gets opened. And it's not only going to be terrorist organizations, it's going to be, like, even government organizations. Like, let's say, for example, you and I were playing a game of Call of Duty, and I say something like, oh, I'm going to own you, it's going to be the worst day of your life. Imagine law organizations listen to this and they go, he's going
to... Are you worried about things you say in a game coming back to haunt you in real life?
I mean, it's already happened. Like, remember the guy who did Runes... said a lot of things on RuneScape and got arrested for it?
I don't know that one off the top of my head, but it wouldn't surprise me. So there's a certain amount of logging, which is important. Now, I have been talking up all the negatives, but there are valid reasons for this. Mostly, it's bug detecting. It's designing games to be more fun. Now, whether you think that being able to look at your personality and design a game to appeal to you is cool, or if you think that's a bit of a weird cyberpunk moment, either way, it's catching cheaters and people who are abusing people in game.
Yeah. I can understand the whole catching cheaters and stuff, because although, mind you, this is like it's like the whole steroid argument. Like, the more law enforcement and the surveillance and game companies catch up in terms of catching the cheaters upgrade the tech to like 10 or 20 years more, and
they do. That's always been an issue. It's an arms race.
Yeah.
And that's why we're seeing increasingly invasive DRM and increasingly invasive anti-cheat.
Yeah, I agree with you. But the question would be, like, even if I grant you the fact that these sorts of measures are for, like, catching cheaters and catching people who are toxic and stuff on the internet, even if I grant you those facts, that this is for the greater good, the question always ends up with, what's the price? Like, are we sacrificing our liberties to do whatever we want on the internet for something heavy-handed? Yes, that's the inner libertarian in me. Like, it's just, like, it's going down a very dangerous path.
Remember, about 6 months ago in Australia, the government wanted us to have to sign up for social media with 100 points of ID.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's a term used outside Australia, but that basically means you need to provide your driver's license and your passport or other equivalent ID.
For social media? Oh, I remember that. That was really messed up.
And China also links your gaming accounts to your real person. And just a week or two ago, announced a, funnily enough, around the same time as Korea lifted their curfew, but announced a gaming curfew for school-aged children.
Yeah, what was it? 3 hours a week? No more than 3 hours a week.
And something like session limits of 1 hour at a time.
Yeah.
So I just don't think this is a can of worms we should really be opening.
Okay. Like,
I think
even
the potential for harm is a lot more than the potential for good.
Okay, we're talking about the when is this can of worms going to be opened? The other question would be, who will open this can of worms?
Exactly. There's a reason I don't trust companies to hold my data. Well, I do, but I don't like it. On the other hand, I also acknowledge that Google likely has better security than anything I could run on a server in my bedroom.
Really, Google has better security than the Chinese computers?
Yeah, I mean, Google has a whole team dedicated to security. I'm one person. I can't possibly run a Google-grade server in my bedroom.
Yeah, that's true.
But we've spoken about China a couple of times in the last few minutes, so let's move on to the next topic. DJ, what's going on in China?
So while China is doing that thing, China is also doing a lot of other things. One including is banning effeminate men, or as they call it, sissy men, on TV. And they're doing this to promote quote unquote revolutionary culture, broadening a campaign to tighten control over business and society and enforce official morality.
Because they think that all men must be manly men and not sissy men. Jeez, China.
So Xi Jinping went further on the China's National Radio and Television Administration, which published guidelines urging broadcasters to stop programs portraying effeminate behavior and other warped content. And the government body also said
Standard, you know, homophobic and transphobic stuff.
I wouldn't expect
much from the Chinese government.
I know, but here's the thing, though. Like, I watched a couple of K drama, and depending on the guidelines, what are they gonna do? Like, what do they constitute as sissy men? Like, I want to know what sissy means. Like, somebody please define sissy for me. Like, dang. Like,
Well, it says it right there, effeminate.
Yeah, but then, like, it's what if it's just by looks only, though, and not, like, by behavior?
Good question.
Yeah.
That does remind me of the TikTok drama, where TikTok were hiding accounts of people who were fat or minorities. Because instead of dealing with the problem of people being harassed on TikTok, they decided to solve the problem by sweeping it under a rug.
So yeah, so the government body said that the selection of actors and guests should be carefully controlled with political literacy and moral conduct included as criteria. Oh.
Yeah, I remember a few years back, didn't they ban men kissing and holding hands on TV?
Yeah. There was a TV show where...
Might source that, but...
Yeah, there was a TV show they were... The two men were doing all this stuff, and yeah, they did that. But, what the interesting part is, this transformation is from a capital-centered to people-centered. That's how they're putting it.
Propaganda. Pretend it's not about the economy. Pretend it's about the people. Because we're going to protect the gay and effeminate men from what exactly?
Yeah. And here's
what are we protecting?
And also, what are they going to do about manly looking women?
That's like, a good question. A manly women band or just girly looking men?
Like, this is basically... They're basically...
I say, what do they think about Tilda Swinton?
Oh, no. Run, Tilda, run! Run!
That's kind of interesting. I kind of want to make a video of androgynous celebrities like Tilda Swinton and David Bowie when he was in that dress and feed that into the Chinese internet somehow. I have no idea how I'd actually perform this experiment, but I'd feed it into the Chinese internet and see how it reacts to androgynous people, which is sort of the point. Sissy men, like effeminate men, are also to an extent androgynous.
Yeah, and from what I've gathered, like, this is basically trying to minimize Hollywood's Western influences. I think that's what they're trying to do. And I have a question for Hollywood. Oh, sorry.
That does sound possible because there is increasing acceptance of gay and trans people in Western media.
Yeah. And I got a question for Hollywood. Hey, Hollywood, do you still want to pander to the Chinese market because of this?
Is it true, based on this change, that... What's her name? The actress from Mulan?
Yeah.
Is in trouble because of these new laws?
No, the actress from Mulan, I think she was... I don't think she was in trouble for anything. Like, all I know is she was in trouble for, like, supporting the Chinese troops. But this was I think this was something else.
Yeah, she supported the Chinese control of Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I saw a comment the other day about her being in trouble with the system.
Yeah.
But I'd need to look into it.
Yeah. And
Zhao Wei apparently has been
disappeared
from streaming platforms.
Oh, yeah.
Is that who that is?
Last week Zhao Wei got blacklisted, she got scrubbed off the internet as well.
No, she's not from. No, she is. It must be a mistake on the Wikipedia page because it says she was in the 2009 Mulan. Oh, no, that's a Chinese version. That's the deal.
Okay, yeah,
so there's a Chinese Mulan and then the 2019 or is it 2020 reboot?
I think 2020, but...
Yeah. So, you know, they're cracking down over the past few years doing it, but this seems to be another level of cracking down on Chinese celebrities.
Do you want
to remember Jack Ma, who owns Alibaba, went missing for a bit?
Yeah. And he came back with all smiles and everything.
Pro Chinese government.
Do you want to? I found the rules, quote unquote.
Okay.
Okay. Read so, them off. Okay. Number one: boycott illegal or immoral personnel. When selecting entertainers and guests, radio, television, and internet platforms should not employ people who have an incorrect political stance, break laws and regulations, or speak or behave against public order and morals. Number two, boycott traffic-only, quote-unquote, standards. Idol selection shows cannot be shown, as well as shows starring children of celebrities. Shows should strictly control voting, cannot induce and encourage fans to shop or buy membership in order to vote for their idols. Number three, boycott an overly entertaining trend, promote traditional culture, establish a correct beauty standard, boycott...
Now, my favorite thing about China saying highlight traditional culture, they do know what Chairman Mao did, right? You know, but, that whole thing where they erased traditional Chinese culture.
What's even funnier for me was the first rule of how they, like, do not employ people who have incorrect political stances and stuff. Hey, Hollywood, do you know what you're doing?
Well, this is... I hate the term because it's basically just calling people out for being jerks, but this is government-sanctioned cancel culture.
Yeah!
Which, I suppose... To invoke Poe's law, the final solution was government-supported cancel culture.
Oh, okay, let me continue.
I mean, we already know China's doing horrible things to the... Sorry, I'm always getting this pronunciation wrong. The Uyghur?
The Uyghur.
That's it.
Yeah.
China, what are you doing?
here's the problem though, right? China, even though they're always like considered the contrarians, they always influence the Western world. That's the scary part. Well,
that's what multiculturalism is. It's influence from everywhere.
Yeah.
So, we have companies in the West pandering to China because China is the world's biggest market. You know, a billion people. You'd be a bloody idiot not to go after a billion people who could buy your product.
Oh, yeah.
Do you hate money or something? But on the other hand, we've got China doing this stuff. Fortunately, we're not doing it over in most of the West.
Oh, really? I mean, Twitter is doing it, though. Like, I mean, big tech has been...
Not as bad as government sanction, though.
Yeah,
there's a difference between what we see as cancel culture and governments actually taking an active role in suppressing people they don't like. Most Western countries are, you know, coming to terms with gay and trans people. There's still a handful, particularly Eastern Europe and South America, that aren't. China has just taken a big step back.
All right, let me continue on with this one. So, where was I? All right, traditional culture, establishing a correct beauty standard, boycott, quote-unquote, sissy idols.
Correct beauty standards? That is like the TikTok thing where fat and ugly people were hidden. Does this mean you can't have ugly people on TV?
I mean, look at Hollywood movies, for example. Like, they're doing it, even though
ugly people in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And people who aren't conventionally attractive.
Yeah. But then the problem is, though, like, they always mask it under things like body positivity and stuff, even though...
Not always.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
I mean, some shows take people who are specifically cast to be ugly and don't bother doing anything about body positivity. IT Crowd has that episode where Roy ends up dating Judy or Julie, and he thinks he's gotten in with the hot one, but he ends up with this ugly woman. That's an older example. Like, older as in a decade old, not particularly old.
Yeah.
Like, Steve Buscemi isn't a particularly handsome guy. Sorry, Steve, if you're listening, which I doubt, but just in case.
You mean Steve Buscemi?
However you pronounce it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I always get those sorts of names wrong. Because I try to phonetically read them, but I don't,
pronounce them.
Pronounce them right, yeah. He's not the most attractive beauty standards kind of guy.
Yeah, I get you. That's true. That's true. But okay, so let me continue on with the rules. So boycott CC Idols, boycotting daunting wealth, gossip, or vulgar internet celebrities.
Okay, so just for fun, I googled ugly actors to see if there were any examples that weren't coming to mind, and I found an IMDb list created by a user, obviously. So, top five of their top 50 ugliest male actors: Jack Nicholson, Robin Williams.
What? No, no way.
Robin's not ugly.
No. What? Are you kidding? That's sacrilege. Sacrilege, I tell you.
Like, you get a six before you even get Danny DeVito.
Okay, who's third?
Third is Tommy Lee Jones. Then we have Christopher Walken and Sean Penn.
Sean Penn? Really? Sean Penn? Nah.
Yeah, I feel like they've just picked random actors, because some of them I agree with.
Nah, Sean Penn, really? Nah, I'm looking at a picture of him right now. He doesn't look ugly as hell. Like, what the hell?
Danny DeVito sort of really plays into not being attractive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Buscemi's a little bit weird looking.
This may sound unpopular, but whenever I look at Steve Buscemi, I'm thinking of Macaulay Culkin when he gets older.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I've seen that meme. Yeah, when which, to be fair, he had some drug issues, so he hasn't aged the best.
Okay, who's the last person in that list that's ugly?
Just scrolling through it. Gary Busey?
What? No! Gary Busey?
Meatloaf. Okay, you've got that one. Meatloaf is a bit odd looking.
Yeah, especially when his voice breaks. Remember that infamous AFL final? Oh, Meatloaf.
Tim Curry?
Tim Curry, yeah, okay, he has aged a bit, yeah, yeah. I mean,
but, like, you know, it doesn't matter if they're ugly, I was just looking for examples to jog my memory, but why would you filter out people who aren't perfectly attractive?
I think they're trying to remind people, okay, think about your roots. This whole thing is a lie. Like,
yeah, and probably also presenting an image.
Yeah.
It's starting to feel a little bit North Korea over there.
But here's the sad part though. Hollywood is going that route. This is what, okay.
Are they?
Yeah,
Has Hollywood banned ugly actors? Because all of the actors on this list who I would consider unattractive still have great careers.
Yeah, yeah, true. Okay, I'll grant you that fact, but they're also, they're banning certain races, like certain stuff, you know?
Is Hollywood doing that? Hollywood's becoming increasingly diverse.
They are becoming increasingly diverse, I'll grant you that, but the problem is it's not by forceful, it's by force. in a sense, like community, like public opinion kind of thing, you know?
I don't see the problem with keeping up with public opinion, as long as public opinion isn't something horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it used to be public opinion to lynch black people in the US. That's not cool. Not acceptable.
Yeah.
That's an example of when you wouldn't want to follow public opinion. But public opinion that black people are cool and just as people as white people? That's public opinion that I would want to follow.
That's true. But yeah, let me continue on with the rules before we we start granting all this stuff. So
let's get through that quickly then.
Yep. Okay. So number four, boycott high pay in the entertainment industry, strictly regulate payments for guests, encourage celebrities to participate in charity shows, punish fake contracts and tax evasion. Okay. Yeah, I like that. Okay.
I mean, actors are, you know, it makes sense that actors are paid millions of dollars because that's the amount of money that comes in from a movie. But I see that China is possibly trying to knock down the upper class a little.
Yeah. Number five, regulate showbiz stuff, enforce licensing to TV television hosts, provide professional and moral training. Entertainers should not use their profession and fame to gain profit. Entertainers should not use their profession or fame to gain profit.
Okay, some of these are starting to sound very communist, which I suppose makes sense.
Yeah. Number six, promote professional commentary in the entertainment industry. Insist on correct political direction and values. Criticize the fake...
So, don't make anything that doesn't make toe the line and make the party out to be the great, wonderful Chinese couple.
That, and plus, like they say, criticize the fake, ugly, and evil values. Yeah... I mean, I think they're also trying to say the whole do not use misinformation, in a sense. Like,
okay, but it's China, so
yeah.
Look at the ulterior motive there.
Yeah. Number seven.
I think in China, it's far more likely that they're doing it to suppress rebellion.
Yeah. Okay. So number seven. Entertainment associations should provide more training and establish mechanisms for industry regulation as well as criticize bad examples. All right. And number eight, regulators need to be more accountable, listen to the people and respond to their concerns. Fill public space with positive and mainstream shows.
Jeez. How many more of these are there, DJ?
That's the last one.
Okay.
Hey, this is what happens when you let a certain group run everything.
The party.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, this could happen over here. I mean, I worry about that because if we let some Puritan run everything and all of a sudden, like, they're gone to, like, I'm here today and gone tomorrow. Like, some minor social infraction, my social media could be scrubbed.
On the other hand, there's a difference because in China, the social media is controlled by the state. If the state doesn't like you and you get kicked off the social media, you're screwed.
Yeah.
In the West, you have options.
Yeah, but the problem is...
they're not particularly good options.
Yeah, but here's the problem, though. Like, there are options, yeah, but the problem is there's always the extreme voices, and they're going to move the goalposts and be like, spread anything we don't like or say anything we don't like, and we'll boot you from the internet and destroy your career. So, I mean, Hollywood, this is what communism looks like, and I wonder if Disney knows what this was coming.
I think Disney knows that China is a horrible... Like, look, it's fine for the vast majority of Chinese people, but the government of China is doing horrible stuff to people like the Uyghurs.
Yeah, the Uyghurs.
Yep. And now they're taking a big step back on LGBT acceptance. Disney sees that. Disney don't care. Disney wants that billion people market.
To sum up, this is basically saying capitalism bad, social communism good. You have to enforce correct beauty standards and the correct opinions, or else.
That's the Chinese government in a nutshell.
Yep. And
anyway,
we've really got
to move on.
Yep.
To our next topic. News from somewhere much closer to home. Space, the final frontier. We have, launching from Australia this weekend, the first commercial rocket launch from mainland Australia in possibly ever. So the launch will be TI Space's, or TI Space maybe, 10.2-meter two-stage orbital rocket HAPIF-1, launching from Port Lincoln in New South Australia. So this is specifically from the Whalers Way launch site. Looks like the... Actually, I've just gone and had a look at some more info. The rocket is still being delayed. And there are many protesters out there because it is a quite picturesque place. There are protesters there because it's a touristy place. And touristy places don't like anything that might threaten their... It's just not in my backyardism. In the past, the company Southern Launch has also launched from Coobibba Aboriginal lands in South Australia. I think, it is a bit odd that apparently it is quite close to a conservation zone, and I kind of understand a little bit. It's a launch site in a relatively small town. On the other hand, it's just a bunch of NIMBYism. This is the future. We need rockets. Give us rockets. Let us go to space. We'll go to space and we'll leave you alone to have your little town and on the coast.
So, could you think this rocket, like Australia coming into the space, having its own space agency and stuff, are we going to be seeing a big new space race? I mean, we already talked about the space race in terms of Amazon versus Virgin, for example. So, like, do you reckon?
So, what's interesting is that the launch sites all seem to be in southern Australia, and historically, that's been true as well. We used to have a launch site in Woomera. But the problem is, the latitude is far too low for most types of launches. The whole reason why the American launch sites are as far south as they can get them is because you want to launch from close to the equator for 90% of missions. So this will be a fairly low-volume site compared to somewhere like Canaveral or Space Base Texas. So I think they're just overreacting a bit. It's going to be an entirely minor deal compared to any other rocket launch site. Where we should be building a launch site is up near, up past Cairns. Then we'd be competitive for launching to equatorial orbits. But maybe they're specifically aiming to go after the polar orbits. I don't know. Still, I think it's pretty damn cool. I do like this statement from a Port Lincoln resident. If they want to make a development, they can go out to London or England, where there's heaps of concrete already. Because London or England, like, What? That's as dumb as saying England is my city.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I personally think it's a bunch of NIMBYism.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
can't build a rocket launch site in England because there's tons of people there. You couldn't have the clearance you need. And also, it's not a very good launch site. Just like I said, you want to be close to the equator for most types of launches. You don't want to be in London for a launch to most orbits.
Nah. And plus, if you want to do it in the middle of London, like, there's not much barren places in London.
Yeah, like, I don't think there's, you know, just looking into this topic the other day, I don't think the people there understand what's going on, really. Like, obviously, on the ground there, they know better than I do what the area is like. I've only been there once.
Yeah.
Like, 10 years ago, before there was a rocket site there.
Yeah. And what people don't also realize is that think of the, it could also bring jobs, guys. Could bring in people, bring in
jobs
more.
Jobs and growth.
Jobs and growth. Jobs and growth, guys.
Space tourism.
Yeah.
People want to go to watch rocket launches because rocket launches are bloody awesome.
You know, you just reminded me of The Simpsons when they brought it, where NASA was going like, okay, we're losing interest. People are losing interest in the rocket launch. What's our next best idea? Let's put the common man in the space shuttle.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that ever happened.
Yeah, like, I get they're trying to protect the environment and stuff, but
these sorts of things don't tend to go ahead without protecting the environment, and they're comparing it to a mine. Realistically, it's a far smaller operation than a mine. There's far less ecological disturbance, there's far less land taken up, and at the end of it, you just tear down the launch structure, and it's basically back to nature. Unlike a mine, where you have to fill it in and rehabilitate.
Yeah. I like one of the quotes from Southern Launch. The bigger the rocket, the bigger the rocket, the louder the noise. These are very small rockets. We have an active water deluge system, so there will be water sprayed all over the place, which will help to dampen the noise as well.
Yeah, you still don't want to get too close.
Yeah, they said
anyway, moving on to our next space topic for the night.
Sure.
You know what's less cool? 2021 NY1. It's an asteroid which in the next month is going to come past the Earth and is considered hazardous.
Aww.
So NASA defines near-Earth objects as any asteroid or comet that comes less than 1.3 astronomical units from the Earth. An astronomical unit is the distance from the Earth to the Sun. So by comparison, annoyingly, this article is in miles, but the moon is 24,000 miles away. 2021 NY1 is going to come within 930,000 miles. So it's close. It's not that close, but it is close enough to be a little bit concerned. Don't freak out too much about it, but, you know, you might want to carry an umbrella or something to hide under when it happens.
You know what's going to be funny, though? I wonder how many doomsday prophecy people are going to go like, quick, it's coming! It's the end!
Yeah. So, the asteroid is comparable in size to a school bus or smaller, but is unlikely to impact Earth. Oh, well.
We missed our chance
to end the universe.
Although, mind you, remember there was a footage of a comet when it crashed Earth and shook a town in Russia?
Yes, the Chelyabinsk meteor.
Yeah, that
and there was a significant meteor just a couple of days ago in Brisbane. I'm not sure if the cause has been identified yet, but it was a rather large meteor. Unfortunately, I didn't see it. I've seen some videos. Traveled across the sky for quite some time before breaking up. Not sure if it's a meteor or a rocket re-entry, though. It's cool. But we'll have a quick break for advertising sponsors. This episode brought to you by whoever that goes in there. And then we'll get on with our shout-outs.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Alright, so for the shoutouts, we've run a bit over time, so let's get through this quickly. September 11th this year, we passed the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks against the World Trade Center. The attacks, which I'm sure everyone knows about, several aircraft were hijacked and two were flown into the World Trade Center buildings, causing them to collapse. And one was flown into the Pentagon, and one crashed in a field when the passengers took it back from the hijackers. 3,000 people died in the event, and it's the deadliest terrorist attack ever. And just about everything in international policy with the Middle East and the West seems to have stemmed from that since then. You could write so many books about the way the world changed after 9/11. And we just don't have time to go into there. On the 5th of September 2021, we have Michael Keaton's 70th birthday. Michael Keaton is known for being Bruce Wayne in the Tim Burton Batman movies. So for playing Jack Butler in Mr. Mum, Beetlejuice in Beetlejuice, and Adrian Toomes, or the Vulture, in Spider-Man Homecoming. He's not related to Buster Keaton or Diane Keaton, and did not name himself after them. Because there's the Screen Acting Guilds in the various countries have rules about names. You can't have the same name as another actor. So Michael Keaton had to pick a new name and went through a list of names and got to the K's and decided Keaton sounded inoffensive. Little does he know that Keaton, in the language of the Quasorpians, is utterly offensive, and I cannot say it now or they will hunt me down and kill me. He was born Michael John Douglas, so you can see the confusion with the other Michael Douglas. When he was in the Tim Burton Batman movies, he negotiated a break in the contract in case the Pirates made the playoffs that year.
Because he was a big, big Pittsburgh Pirates fan. That has got to be awesome. Imagine getting a contract like that.
Yeah, he must have been seriously obsessed. On the 7th of September, we pass the 85th anniversary of the death of the last Thylacine. The last captive Thylacine, who was named Benjamin, lived at Hobart Zoo until his death on the 6th of September. And as part of the anniversary, they've remastered the last known footage of a living Thylacine. While filming the footage, David Flay was bitten on the buttock. Benjamin died, the zoo expected it would soon find a replacement, and his death was not reported in the media. Although, unfortunately, this was just shortly after the official protection of the species was introduced, and the species is now officially extinct. Possibly not. There's a lot of people who think they've seen them. It's like our sort of friendlier Bigfoot. No, we have the Bunyip, which is our sort of Bigfoot and Yowies. Uh-huh. Yeah, you get my point. It's something officially doesn't exist, but lots of people reckon they've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Yowie is more like a Bigfoot. I do wonder, though, like, getting a bit off topic there, but there's so many cultures of stories about large, hairy people. Like Bigfoot, Bunyip, sorry, Bigfoot, Yowie, Abominable Snowman, Sasquatch. I do wonder what the sort of the root story is for that. On the 9th of...
I know, so I've heard some crazy stories, but yeah, that we can go, we can talk to the conspiracy theory mob about that.
Yeah. On the 9th of September, we passed another anniversary of an Aussie animal, the 25th anniversary of Crash Bandicoot. I love reading about the development of Crash Bandicoot because it was really pushing the capabilities of the PlayStation to its limits.
And it was also teaching the developers of the game how to make polygons and whatnot. Yeah,
and the whole level design, the reason it's so populated for a PlayStation 1 game is because the camera is tightly on rails and they went through and optimized each section to hide areas and cut it down so that it could keep an acceptable frame rate. They codenamed it Sonic's Arse Game because the... player would have been always looking at Crash's backside. Yes, it's a hell of a story. So the development started before Super Mario 64 released. They were originally going to call it Willy the Wombat.
Yeah, the marketing team decided, okay, it's okay. If not Willy, we'll have Wes, Wazzles, or Wizzy.
No, like, not Wizzy.
No. That did not... Not Wizzy.
And on the 7th of September, 1741, we have our remembrance, Blas de Lezo. Admiral Blas de Lezo y Olivarieta was a Spanish Navy officer, best known for the Battle of Cartagena de Indias in Colombia, where Spanish forces under his command defeated a British invasion force under Admiral Edward Vernon. And the reason we picked him is because he had a hell of a story of getting injured. He lost his left eye, left hand, mobility in his right arm, and had his left leg amputated after being hit by a cannonball. He wore his wounds as medals and refused to wear an eye patch over his blind eye.
That will strike fear into anyone who sows dissent. And the interesting part is the story of the Cartagena de Indias, that was also a very, very legendary story as well.
How'd it go?
A lot of people died. let me put it that way. That long story short.
Okay, so a particularly bloody battle.
Yep.
For our birthday, we have on the 7th of September, 1829, August Kekule. They couldn't have named him September Kekule. Friedrich August Kekule, later Friedrich August Kekule von Stradonitz, was a German organic chemist. He was the principal founder of the theory of chemical structure and the Kekule structure of benzene. He actually came up with the shape for benzene from a dream that he had about an Ouroboros.
I wonder if that's where they got the reference of Professor Farnsworth and how he developed the dark matter engine. He came to me in a dream.
Possibly. Possibly also so they didn't have to explain how it worked. He was born in Darmstadt, the Grand Duchy of Hesse. And for our events of interest, we have on the 7th of September 1909, the first casualty of a powered heavier-than-aircraft crash. The pilot was Eugene Lefebvre. Sorry, I can't say that one. He was the chief pilot of the Wright Company in France. And while flying a French-built Wright biplane, poor weather meant that they weren't able to fly during the day, so he started stunt flying at around 6 p.m. during a... sorry, this wasn't the instance where he died. This was a race, one of the first air races, I suppose. The Gordon Bennett Trophy. The New York Times described that Eugene, so I don't have to say his name because that's hard, came diving in at the crowded tribunes, turned in the nick of time when sailing off, swooped down again till he made the flags and the pillars and the plumes on the ladies' hats flutter, and so played about at will for our applause. He was fined $4 for displaying excessive recklessness and daring.
Damn, that's a very cheap fine. So cheap, in fact, I could have paid
well,
that.
Well, it was 1909 money.
Ah, yeah. Still, $4 for that? I mean, dang. Yeah.
He placed fourth in the race. I want to know more about this race now. Like, was it like the original Red Bull Air race?
The Gordon Bennett Trophy, eh?
Yes.
That was...
So, there's also the Gordon Bennett Automobile Cup.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a time trial. Oh, Gordon Bennett also ran a balloon competition.
So, okay, here we go. So, the Gordon Bennett Trophy, the aviation one, it's an international airplane race trophy awarded by Gordon Bennett Jr., who was publisher of the New York Herald newspaper.
Interesting that the Gordon Bennett
trophies
actually
trial.
Have a retirement clause. So... after a single country has won the trophy 3 times consecutively, it seems that the event is cancelled and that country is the official permanent winner, which is France as of 1920. But anyway, off topic. So Eugene placed fourth behind Glenn Curtis, Blériot, and Latham, whose names you might recognise. Glenn Curtis, I believe, was part of the Curtis Aircraft Company. We might have spoken about him in the past. 9 days later, Eugene was killed in a crash when the plane he was testing dropped to the ground from 6 meters. And for our wacky movie, we have the 7th of September 1958 release of Queen of Outer Space. This was directed by Edward Burns and starred Eric Fleming and Zsa Gabor. And the plot is that American astronauts are drawn to the planet Venus, which is inhabited only by beautiful women and their despotic queen.
can you imagine if there was if there was the king of outer space and it was astronauts were drawn by mysterious force to the planet Mars?
That sounds like a sequel some film student should make. And it's just like a bunch of scantily clad, muscly men instead of, like, Amazons.
Oh, no. The sissy men from China will go to this planet. And their king is a muscly man.
So, the producer, Walter Wanger, was released from prison, a bit of normative determinism there, for shooting his agent, Jennings Lang, in the green. He found out Jennings had been having an affair with his wife and shot him in the groin.
Oh.
Originally, the title was Queen of the Universe.
Queen of Outer Space, that was
no, Queen of Outer Space is the new title. The original was Queen of the Universe. They renamed it during development.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And following on from last week's movie, Forbidden Planet, Queen of Outer Space reused props from Forbidden Planet. Sets and models and effects from World Without End. And Flight to Mars. Zsa Gabor, who played the Queen, was upset with the actresses playing the other Venusian girls, who were beauty contest winners and were significantly younger than her. She got upset that the crew was paying more attention to the tall, leggy, mini-skirted Venusians than they were to her, and became difficult to work with. She gave the producer Ben Schwab such a hard time that he ended up with ulcers. The film has a 15-minute prologue on the opening credits, and the odd coincidence that the uniforms of the armed women on Venus, matching the costume of the colours of the uniforms in the original Star Trek.
They can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, thatsnotcanon.com, with an archive of our old episodes and new episodes. And you can also find the new That's Not Canon podcast, such as Sincerely Unqualified, which is all about comedy, movies, comedy movies,
in the movie
when the world's combined,
you
have hosts Winnie and Kevin Hook, a podcast rooted in comedy movie deep dives. These co-hosts now discuss entertainment news and review the hottest movies released each week. And remember, kids, that's all I have for today. Time for me to bugger off now.
All right, look after yourself, stay hydrated, and we'll see you next time. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.